the book of Habakkuk chapter 2. I heard the story of a man one time who was facing many trials and many difficulties in his life. In fact, it seemed like every time he turned around, he was being unjustly and unfairly attacked or accused or slandered. And he did everything he could to try to solve the problems, but it's just one of those things that went on and on and on and on and on. You know how sometimes things go. And it just seemed like it was never going to end. And then finally the day came when the tables were turned. And he was vindicated. And all of those who had been making the accusations, they had to kind of... you know the expression, eat crow? Do you understand what that means? I'll explain it later. Anyway, all of his enemies who had spoken evil of him, they had to take it all back. And so they had to admit that they had been wrong. And when it came to all to an end, the man breathed with a sigh of relief and said, "Phew, there is a God. There is a God." That's kind of the relief that Habakkuk felt in the text that we're going to be looking at tonight. You remember last time we learned how that God deals with His own people first, right? God deals with His own people first. And because of this, many times believers can begin to think that God is being unfair. He's being unjust. He's being unkind because He's being hard on the believers and He's letting the unbelievers go scot-free. And so many times they begin to think about how that God is unfair and unjust. But the truth of the matter is, you remember we learned God is taking notes, right? He is taking notes. And we saw how that He's paying attention to what goes on. He knows about all of the wickedness and all the sin and all the corruption and the vile things that are going on in the world. And so when it came to these people called the Chaldeans or the Babylonians, when it came to these people, God knew, He knew all about, first of all, their pride. He knew all about that. And He knew that their pride was not just a pride, but it was a pride that was intensified by their drunkenness. And so we talked about that last time. And then also, God knew all about their discontent. God knew all about their discontent. In other words, they burned with a greed that would not be satisfied. God knew all about that. And because of that greed, you remember, their armies, the Lord said, would go out constantly marching, constantly seeking spoil. They were robbing the nations around them, and they were constantly seeking to force their captives into a type of cruel slavery. God knew all about that. He's taking notes. He's taking notes. And yet, even though God knew all about these things, it seemed that He wasn't really going to do anything about it. It seems that time is going by and He's not going to do anything. But now we come to our text and here we find that not only does God know about their sins, there is coming a day of reckoning. There is coming a day when God is going to balance the books. He's going to balance the books. So now the Lord God tells Habakkuk about the woes that He's going to bring against the Chaldeans. He's going to tell us about the woes. Now you need to understand that the word woe has to do with the sad, tragic, difficult, unpleasant circumstances that come as a result of sin. That's what these woes are. That's what these woes are. And this is clearly seen when we take it for example Isaiah in Isaiah chapter 3 and verse number 11. Here's what it says: "Woe unto the wicked! It shall be ill with him, for the reward of his hands shall be, not might be, shall be given to him." That's the woes of God. God is going to make things right. He's going to settle the accounts. We find the same sort of thing in the book of Ezekiel, chapter 16, verse number 23. It says, "And it came to pass after all thy wickedness," notice it, "woe, woe unto thee, saith the Lord God." So in our text today, we're going to see the woes of God's judgment that are going to come upon these Chaldeans because of their wickedness, because of their sinfulness, because of their rebellion against God. And these woes are going to come because of some specific things that God observed while He was taking notes. Okay? So let's notice the first one here. There is the woe against stealing. The woe against stealing. And there's three things that I want us to notice here. First of all, there is the taunt. The taunt. In Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 6, "Shall not all these take up a parable against him and a taunting proverb?" A taunting proverb against him, and say, "Woe to him that increaseth that which is not his." In other words, woe to the one who is making himself rich by taking things that don't belong to him. Which the Hebrew word for that is literally stealing. Stealing. That's what they're doing. That's what they're doing. The nations that had been plundered and spoiled by the Chaldeans will take up a proverb. It's going to be a taunting proverb. It's going to be a taunting proverb. And it's a proverb of woe against the Chaldeans who have enriched themselves by stealing what belonged to other people. Now this taunting proverb, I think, interestingly enough, is actually found in the book of Proverbs. And it's found in Proverbs chapter 22, verse number 8. Here it is. "He that soweth iniquity shall reap vanity." He sows wickedness, but what does he get in return? Nothing. It's just emptiness. Just emptiness. It's the same thing the Apostle Paul talked about in a very familiar passage, Galatians chapter 6, verse number 7. "Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth," that's what he's going to reap. That's what he's going to reap. You see, stealing is a sin. We understand that, right? God made it very clear in the book of Exodus chapter 20, verse 15. One of the Ten Commandments is, "Thou shalt not steal." Thou shalt not steal. And it makes no difference whether the stealing is done by an individual, or if the stealing is done by a government, or if the stealing is done by any invading armies. When men steal and they enrich themselves by robbing others, God is going to deal with that. God is going to not allow that to go unpunished. So there's the woe against stealing, and it's a taunting proverb that what these people have done have actually, in the long run, not benefited them at all. All it has done is brought trouble. That is the taunting proverb. But not only do we see the taunting, I want you to notice the question. And it's very simple. In verse number 6, the question is simply this: how long? In other words, how long is it going to be, God, before you do something? How long is it going to be before your judgment comes? How long is it going to be before you begin to balance the accounts and you begin to deal with these wicked people? And so there's the question. But then we also find, let her see, the assurance. The assurance. In Habakkuk chapter 2 and verse number 6, "And to him that ladeth himself with thick clay." Now that's very easy to understand. In fact, that's so easy, I'm going to let Brother Mingfai explain what that means. Actually, this thick clay that we find here in this text refers to the heavy tablets upon which were recorded the debts that were owed and the debts that needed to be paid. That was what these heavy tablets were. It was the debts that were owed or the debts that needed to be paid. In other words, because these Chaldeans were strong and powerful, They thought that they could just go in and take whatever they wanted without having to face any consequences. After all, might makes right. Isn't that the philosophy of the world? Might makes right. But God doesn't see things that way. God doesn't see things that way. In fact, the Bible teaches in Numbers chapter 32 and verse number 23 that no matter who you are or how powerful you are, be sure your sin will find you out. Be sure your sin will find you out. The fact is, there will always come, as we've said, there will always come a day of reckoning, a day when God will balance the books, a day when men are going to reap what they have sowed. And for these Chaldeans who had robbed and they had spoiled so many nations, they would suffer being robbed and they would suffer being spoiled by somebody else. Because what you sow, that's what you reap, right? What you sow is what you reap. In fact, notice the prophecy. It's given in verse 7 and verse 8. So shall they, that is, some enemy, shall they not rise up suddenly that shall bite thee, and awake that shall vex thee, and thou shalt be for booties unto them? That word booty simply means spoil. It's the spoils of war that are being spoken of. Verse 8, because thou hast spoiled many nations. That's what you did. You have spoiled many nations. All the remnant of the people shall spoil thee. Because of men's blood, and for the violence of the land, of the city, and of all that dwell therein. The promise is simply this. What they had sowed is what they were going to reap. What they had done to others, that's what was going to happen to them. Because God is always going to balance the books. He's always going to balance the books. And so God pronounced His woe against the Chaldeans because they had made themselves rich by stealing that which had been taken from those who were weaker than themselves. Well, there's a woe then that is also given not only stealing, but also there's the woe against covetousness. The woe against covetousness. Now these are the same sins we saw last time. But now we're seeing the result of those sins. And so the woe against covetousness. Now you understand that covetousness is not just a sin. It's a deadly sin. Covetousness is a deadly sin. And the reason why it is such a deadly sin is explained to us in Colossians chapter 3, verse 5, where it says that covetousness, and then notice what it says, covetousness, which is idolatry. Covetousness is idolatry. In Ephesians chapter 5, and verse number 5. For this you know, that no whoremonger nor unclean person, notice this, nor covetous man who is an idolater hath any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. In other words, men who are controlled by covetousness are men who love the physical things of this world more than they love God. In other words, their priority in life is to get more of this world's stuff. And if you have more stuff than they have, they become covetous of that. And all they can think about is how you have more than they have. And how hard they're going to have to work to catch up with you and then surpass you because they want to be, what's the word? Kiasu? Okay, yeah, I'm talking your language now, right? And so they want to have more. They want to be first. They want to have all of this stuff. And see, that becomes the priority of their life. And the things of this world are now in control on the throne room of their heart, and God is removed. Therefore, the things become idols. And they become idolaters. They become idolaters. Men who are controlled by covetousness are men who have placed before God something. Something. It may be a relationship. It may be a job. It may be a house. It may be possessions. It may be a portfolio. Whatever it is that we put before God, that's an idol. That's an idol. And we need to understand that. Idolatry. It's a deadly sin. And that's why. That's why in 1 John chapter 5, verse 21, we have this warning. Notice what it says. It says, little children. Not talking about lost people. This is talking about children of God. He's writing to Christians. You see, this thing of idolatry, even though as Christians we would never go to a temple and bow down to a pagan god, yet the truth of the matter is sometimes Christians have idols in their heart, see? And so John says, little children, talking to Christians, little children, keep yourselves from idols. Keep yourselves from idols. I want you to notice that this sin of covetousness, it's a deadly sin. It's because it's like idolatry. But not only that, it's a deadly sin because it is the root of all evil. It's the root of all evil. It's in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 9 to verse number 11. The fact this covetousness that caused these Chaldeans to murder innocent people and to destroy cities that had done them no harm. It was the covetousness that they had that caused them to do that. And so therefore God says in Habakkuk chapter 2 verse 9, woe to him that coveteth an evil covetousness to his house, that he may set his nest on high, that he may be delivered from the power of evil. In other words, these Chaldeans were trying to justify their actions by claiming that their armies were killing and plundering the nations around them because, just like an eagle, they wanted to make their house safe. They wanted to protect their national interests, and so they went out and destroyed everybody around them. And they plundered everybody around them. But you see, God knows the hearts of all men. And God knew that the real reason for their killing and the real reason for their plundering was not that they wanted to protect their own national interest, but it was simply because of their own wicked covetousness. And so I want you to notice three things that their covetousness brought upon them. Three things their covetousness brought upon them. First of all, it brought shame. It brought shame. Habakkuk chapter 2, verse number 10, thou hast consulted shame to thy house. In other words, you have brought shame on yourself. You have brought shame on yourself by cutting off, that is, by destroying many people. You have brought shame on yourself. Brought shame on yourself. Not only had they brought shame on themselves, they also brought destruction on themselves. Habakkuk chapter 2 and verse 10, thou hast sinned against thy soul. You've sinned against your soul. In other words, not only are there going to be physical consequences because of your sin, not only are there going to be physical consequences because of your covetousness and your idolatry, there's spiritual consequences. No, it doesn't say you're going to cut off your body. It says you're going to cut off your soul. There's spiritual consequences that are involved here. So there's shame, there's destruction. And then let her see, there's condemnation. The Chaldeans could not deny their guilt simply because of the fact, Habakkuk 2 and 11 says, the stone shall cry out of the wall, and the beam out of the timber shall answer it. In other words, the condemnation is simply that they have sinned and they cannot deny it because all of the evidence is against them. All of the evidence is against them. One writer has noted in the pulpit commentary, I liked what he said. He said, regardless of how strong or secure a people might be, whatever they build by covetousness or cruelty will witness against them and eventually cause their destruction. Because God is taking notes. God will right the wrongs. God will bring judgment. So there's the woe against, the woe against their covetousness. And then there's another woe that we find here, and that's the woe against ambition. The woe against ambition. The Chaldeans had great ambitions. They had some great ambitions. As we said before, they wanted a universal kingdom. Remember, it started all the way back in Genesis, when they built the Tower of Babel. And they wanted to build a city that would reach all the way up to heaven. They wanted to build a tower. They wanted to have a one world government and a one world religion. That's what that tower was all about. They wanted, and that idea, that mentality hasn't changed. And so these Chaldeans, they wanted a universal kingdom so they could rule over all the nations that were around them. They wanted their capital city, Babylon, to be the most beautiful and to be the greatest city in all the world. And history declares they succeeded. They succeeded in their ambition. Babylon was great. It was great. The Greek historian Herodotus, he said that the city of Babylon lay in a great plain covered 196 square miles. That each side of the city measured 22.5 kilometers. Each side of the city was 22.5 kilometers. If you were to walk around the walls, you would have to walk nearly 90 kilometers. That was just on the inside of the city. You'd have to walk 90 kilometers to walk around the city. Herodotus also tells us that this great city was surrounded by great walls to protect them. In fact, the walls, according to the history, tells us that they were 106 meters high. No way you're going to get over it. No way you're going to get over it. Those walls extended 10.6 meters below the ground. So there's no way you're going to tunnel under it. They can't get over, you can't go under. And they were also 26.5 meters thick. In fact, they were thick enough, wide enough, that history says that they could actually drive six chariots side by side across the top of the walls. So you can't go over it, you can't go under it, you can't go through it. That's pretty safe. That's pretty safe. And so it was a great city, had great walls. Not only was it safe because of the walls, it was safe because of its fortifications. History tells us the walls were guarded by 250 watchtowers. The walls had 100 huge brass gates that were surrounding the city, and they were also surrounded by a moat that was filled with water. And that was the city of Babylon. So it was a city that was truly a great city, but not only was it great, Babylon was beautiful. It was a beautiful city. In fact, even today, one of the seven wonders of the world is still said to be the Hanging Gardens of Babylon, all right? The Hanging Gardens of Babylon. They were counted as one of the wonders of the world. And so truly, this was, as Isaiah said, in Isaiah chapter 14 and verse 4, this was truly the golden city. City of Babylon. It was a city that was great. It was a city that was beautiful. But in spite of all the greatness, in spite of all the beauty, because of their sin, Babylon was doomed. Babylon was doomed. You see, there was one big problem, and that is this. If we have to sin against God, and if we have to sin against men, in order to have those things that we desire, then our ambition causes us to face God's judgment. When our ambitions lead us to do things that are wrong, they lead us to sin, then our ambition is going to be not our bringing up, but our bringing down. See, that's what our ambition will do for us. That's what our ambition will do for us. And so therefore, God pronounces this final woe against the Chaldeans. Notice it. In Habakkuk chapter 2, verse number 12, woe to him that buildeth a town with blood. You've committed murder. to enrich yourself. You've committed murder to exalt yourself. You've committed murder to make your society great. Woe to him that buildeth a town with blood and establisheth a city by iniquity. Woe to him. Woe to him. In fact, Jeremiah said pretty much the same thing. In Jeremiah chapter 22 and verse number 13, Jeremiah writes, "Woe unto him that buildeth his house by unrighteousness and his chambers by wrong, that useth his neighbor's service without wages." You know what that is? That simply means slave labor. Slave labor. "And giveth him not," doesn't pay him, doesn't give him a right salary for the work that he does. Jeremiah said, woe to that man. Same thing Habakkuk sees. Same thing Habakkuk sees. And that is exactly what Babylon had done. Their great and beautiful city, which was built with the rich spoils they had stolen from other people. Their rich city, which was built by the blood and the sweat of people who were carried away as captives. Babylon is guilty of all of these things, and therefore God's pronouncement is, woe unto you. Woe unto you. And notice the result of it in verse number 13. "Behold, it is not of the Lord of hosts that the people shall labor in the very fire," that is, they labor in hardship, "and the people shall weary themselves for very vanity." In other words, they weary themselves for nothing. Weary themselves for nothing. In other words, when men build contrary to God's will, and when men build contrary to God's way, and when men sin against God in the way that they build, they're actually going to accomplish something that will result in nothing. They're going to accomplish something that results in nothing. And the Lord God is going to allow this for two very important reasons. First of all, to punish Babylon because of her sins against both men and God. But He's also going to punish Babylon in order to make way for something far better. And that is the millennial kingdom. The millennial kingdom. And so therefore, God gives just a brief little message of hope and encouragement to Habakkuk. Notice it in Habakkuk chapter 2, verse number 14. "For the earth shall be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea." You know that hasn't been true since the Garden of Eden, but it will be true one day. When King Jesus comes and sits on the throne, when He comes to rule and reign in righteousness, this promise is going to be fulfilled. It's going to be fulfilled. Now we're going to stop here and we'll continue next time, but as we bring this to a close, there is an important lesson that we should learn from what we have seen so far. The Chaldeans were striving to build a great kingdom, and they were doing it according to their own wisdom. They're doing it according to their own power. And the results were tragic. The results were tragic. Today, Babylon is really not a whole lot more than a big pile of dust and ruins. There is an effort to rebuild the city, but it's still basically a wasteland. It's a wasteland. And as believers in Jesus Christ, we're striving to build a life. We're striving to build a church that will be a source of blessing to men and a useful thing in the hand of God. But in all of our building, we must never forget a very important truth that is found in Psalm 127 in verse 1, where it says, "Except the Lord build the house." Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. As we seek to build our lives, as we seek to build our families, as we seek to build our church, we must remember that it is God who does the building. He is the great contractor, if we can put it that way. He's the great contractor. And it's our job to follow His commands and to follow His word and to do things His way as we yield ourselves completely to His control. It's not doing it in our own strength and our own power, but it's allowing God to work in and through us to accomplish things that will truly honor and glorify Him. And when we do that, then we will have a building that will be blessed by God and will be glorifying to God for all of eternity. So I guess the question is, how are we going to build? We can either do it our way and make a mess, or we can do it God's way and find success. And I pray that God will help us to have the wisdom to choose rightly. Father, we thank You tonight for Your Word. Take these...